and welcome to the Volunteer Firefighter Podcast. My name is Scott, and I'm joined with two fire friends, Todd.
Hello.
And Ash.
Oh, hey there.
And tonight we're going to kind of break away from what we normally do, and we're going to talk about the seminar. Well, I guess we normally talk about the seminar. We're going to talk in depth on the seminar. We're actually going to talk about some all the sessions that we have laid out. So the spring seminar is coming up in a few weeks, May 5th, 6th, and 7th. Here in Oliver. So we're going to break down the sessions, talk a little bit on them, why we have them. Some of them are pretty self-explanatory, like vehicle fire and things like that. And just kind of give a breakdown for anyone that's interested in coming, anyone that's not able to come, you can get jealous. Just in general, it's going to happen. We are pretty jacked up on coffee tonight, too, because we just did our sampling at Wolf Tree Coffee. They're actually going to do a special blend for us for the weekend and ongoing after that, I believe.
I believe so.
And that blend, have we come up with the name?
I think we have.
And that's going to be Ash.
The Initial Attack.
Initial Attack. Yeah, the Initial Attack blend. Mm-hmm. So it is a medium dark roast.
It is. Yep.
Yeah. We were very special samplers, and we gave it a test tonight, and, it's a blend of some different beans. I can't remember which ones. I think it's Peru and Brazilian.
Brazilian bean blend.
Yeah, so we learned
more about coffee than we knew going in. That's for darn sure. Mm-hmm. Coffee beans smell like crap.
When they're not roasted.
Pre-roasted, but after the roast, just delicious.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So we're pretty jacked right now.
Yeah, so awesome opportunity getting in there and having a quick chat with the fine folks from Wolf Tree there. So watch for that. We are drinking it tonight. This is the first batch of our blend. So we are drinking that tonight. And it will be available for sale at the seminar and from that point forward.
Right. So what we're going to do, like I said, we're going to break down the sessions. There's 26 sessions we have going on spring seminars. We're going to not... Some we're going to touch on, some we're going to touch on a little longer, just because we don't want to be here for hours. So no particular order from the list I have. The first one is live fire. We have five live fire events.
Yeah.
Altogether. On this list, I call it wall ceiling. Six? Mm-hmm. No. So I call it wall ceiling on this one. It's basically an initial attack. We've been really hammering on people lately about that. Coming down the hallway, after you made your entry and cooling that thermal layer down, cooling the whole, basically, the layer down so you can start pushing forward. Because there's been lots of research and studies and just fire incidents where they've been training so long about just hitting the fire that, firefighters have been pushing down the hallway, not seeing what's going on above them and allowing for that fire to catch behind them or the flashover to happen. They don't kill the flashover. So we're really pushing on that attack of that wall, ceiling wall, nice, good, long attack, water application, kind of that horseshoe pattern,
right?
Coating the whole area.
Cooling all those superheated gases and that unburnt fuel.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And kind of pushing it back down the hallway. So the concept is we're gonna have that. We're going to have that as a burn building, a little mini burn building. And it's basically we're going to push in from the door, drive down the hallway, wall ceiling wall all the way down, cut a little bit of a corner, and attack the fire. And the way we have this C-can fire that we have set up is that you're not going to hopefully be able to put the fire out just because the way we have it designed. And it'll just be a knockdown, push it back, and depending on if there's a patient inside or not, grab them, making a real quick grab and get out of there. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's the first one. Anything to add on that one?
Nope. I think that's pretty straightforward. Mm-hmm. New session for us. We haven't done that style attack.
No.
Happened before, no.
No, it's definitely new. kind of bounce around. I want to talk all about live fire first, so let's bounce around. Let's go down to water rescue.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, water rescue is actually going to be taught by our local SAR people, and it's actually Swift Water Rescue.
Yeah.
And... We understand some organizations that come to the seminar don't necessarily have rivers that run through their area. But I always find water, like Swift Water and any water rescue, it's kind of like pretty much everybody has water in their area.
Yeah.
I think, especially in our neck of the woods, like there's always going to be a lake. There's always going to be something. Now, you might not actually train it much because maybe you don't have a major body of water, but it's important information. And, you know, swift water is definitely on the higher risk area. Yeah. So if you can do swift water, it's, what is that? If you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball. So if you can dodge, rescue someone in swift water, you can rescue them on flat water.
There we go.
That's what I'm getting.
Where are we going? Yeah, I'm on board.
Yeah.
Well, and you know what? Like you're talking about, like the swift water stuff. But just because somebody doesn't have swift water in the area, there's still a ton of really good skills and knowledge base to build from.
Sure.
Because there's a lot of carryovers from that to static water rescue and boat rescue and things like that. Yeah. We're talking about ropes and pulling people out of water and then patient management, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So. Yeah, so like everybody's saying, there's a lot of carryover skills. So, and that's what we try to do with all of our sessions is, I mean, with the live fire, that's going to be live fire. But with, you know, the rest of the sessions, everybody always says like, oh, maybe I don't have this. Maybe I don't have that. But when we build these sessions, we try to have these carryover skill sets that even if you don't do that particular thing, there's so many other little small little things that you can pull out of a session and bring that back. So
that's right.
Which I think that leads us to the next one we're going to talk about, which is high acuity patient management.
Yep.
And again, we had talked about this. Is it's, you know, because not every department does first responder. Mm-hmm. But like I said, I think I said to the chief today. I said, but there's people in everybody's area, and people get sick.
Yeah.
And they're always. I think even if you're not first responder, like, cause, you know, we weren't first responder for a long time, but we still dealt with patients that were
responding. First.
Mm-hmm. Responding first or being there, and paramedics are like, hey, can you do this for us? Can you do that? And, you know, there was a handful of us that could do it, and there's another handful that would try to do it.
Yeah.
For the most part, they'd muddle through, but now everyone's got the training. So, Todd, you can talk about this one.
Yeah, and again, it's just skills to grow from, you know, like even if you're not a first responder agency, you still may get called upon for an ambulance assist, like go through lift assist, whatever, motor vehicle accidents. House fires, you're still going to have patients from there. And we may be put into a situation providing medical care until ambulance arrives anyway. So,
And these are definitely the higher acuity ones. So
So basically what we're going to do, one of our guys is going to be teaching it. And he's going to be talking a lot about kind of an opiate response and overdose response. And then that'll segue into cardiac arrest management.
Right.
And probably encompass a few other skills and things like that as well. But there's a lot of... specific skills that can be really fine-tuned for high acuity CPR and just best general practice. There's a lot of sloppy CPR and airway management and ventilation management for patients, right? So this is just going to really hone in a lot of the skills and best practices with a little bit of knowledge background and then, of course, the hands-on skills. So, looking forward to that. He's going to do a really good job.
Next up, let's talk about ropes. I just literally wrote ropes on here. One of the instructors, Matt, he's like he's a rope guru. And I said, "What is your session like? What session? What can I describe a session?" I said, he just said ropes. So
perfect.
Okay, that sounds cool. And the thing about Matt and Adam, who are both instructors, they're like crazy good with stuff, and it's not going to be. Like, here's how they do this particular thing. They like to push people. They like to kind of, on the fly, like, what problems have you guys seen in your departments? Mm-hmm. And then they're going to come up with some solutions.
Right.
So it's really just, there's no set, like, this is how it's going to be. They're just going to come up with some different options and angles on different rope systems and how to best employ things that maybe you haven't thought about. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, ropes are good. I hate ropes.
I meant go ahead and pick another one. But God hates ropes.
Well, let's talk a little bit about MCI.
MCI. So that's Dr. Nick's crew.
Yeah. Yeah, RTAC.
Yeah, the RTAC crew is coming. I think one of the guys that's coming is Jason. He's the flight medic. He flies out of Nevada, I believe. Is that right? Somewhere over there.
I don't know. Anywhere. Yeah. Arizona.
He's pretty badass.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I spelled that wrong. Got lots of, made, like, crazy experience with that sort of stuff. And the idea is going to be, kind of that, that final sim that we did, is kind of going to be the sim that they're going to do. Mm-hmm. So they're going to discuss triaging on a certain level. There's so many different, I've been doing a lot of research on triaging lately because I'm developing a program for where I work. Mm-hmm. And there's so many methods of triaging. It's like crazy. I didn't realize how many like different models of triaging there is. There's like there's complicated ones that I find, but those are really for the people that are highly medical trained.
Right.
And then there's like the super basic ones. So like, is the guy awake? Is he not awake? Okay, well that's going to depend on what he's going to be. Like it's like some of them are like almost too basic. Some of them are way too complicated, and then we're kind of getting the Goldilocks.
Yeah, the happy medium is like the smart triage program. That's kind of what the EMS agencies and fire agencies do. And then there's a kind of a spin-off from that too. Later, we'll talk about
the other one.
Stuff. But so basically, MCI do like what we called an Armageddon event.
The Armageddon event, like three or four vehicles, lots of patients.
Yeah, multi-vehicle, multi-patient. Mm-hmm. How to best prioritize your patients in triaging skills and proper kind of casualty collection points, where to put them and why you're placing them in secondary triage, things like that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So very, very good skill to have. We've had a lot of MCIs throughout our province the last little while.
We have had a lot of MCIs, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Actually, you get to pick one on the list.
Sweet.
Let's go grab bag.
Well, what do we have next year? actually something new. I'm going to go one of the high points here. Literally the high point.
Oh.
We're going to talk about heliops.
Heliops.
Yeah, so that's a new one again this year. One of our local aviation companies, they actually do a lot of the wildland firefighting. They have a designated helicopter that specifically just does that.
Well, we have one of their pilots on.
And we have had one of their pilots on, absolutely. So we've kind of gotten pretty close with them, with the podcast, with the fire halls here. One of the pilots is actually a member with Todd. so, you know, between that here, my work, like we deal with them often.
Yeah.
We kind of reached out and said, hey, we have this going on. We've got a group of, you know, guys like us, guys and gals like us. You know, there's no real like dead set training with how to deal with these helicopters when you're out on a wildland scene. So we spoke with them, we spoke with BC Wildfire, and we kind of came up with a bit of a course, like, you know, 1 hour snippet of how we can deal with them, how we can ask them, hey, we need some support over here because we're a dumb firefighter that's down on the ground, and saying, hey, can you hit that tree? It's the one that's on fire. Like, we've joked around about that before.
Well, it's actually was said on the radio.
Yeah. And they're literally like, all of the fucking trees are on fire. Which one? Right? So we've got some training aids that we're going to be developing and throwing out there we kind of came up with. And we've kind of been developing that. The comms with, helicopter pilots, what that's going to look like. And they're actually going to do live drops for us.
Yeah.
So they'll go and pick up water in the river. They'll be coming back
wherever
they might go back, or probably not the river. Sorry. Yeah. They're going to dump over there. They'll probably go over to the lake, grab a bucket, come back and do a live drop off of a point that we will be, you know, instructing them where. So, something new. Again, like Scott, you reached out to BC Forestry, and I think they're like, yeah, this sounds great, but we don't really have anything.
Yeah.
You guys just kind of like muddle through it, and we laugh at you because you're stupid.
Yeah, I mean, and we've done it numerous times. Mm-hmm. And I think even last year, Todd, you were listening to radio comms on, and they were like, and you could hear one engine trying to describe where they want it, and the guys kind of give descriptions, and the chopper was like, well, I don't know, where do you want it exactly?
Yeah.
Like, I know when I did it on when Mike was the pilot, I based it on where our engine was parked.
Yeah.
And I said, like, give me a drop 50 meters off my tailboard of my engine.
Mm-hmm.
That worked great.
Yeah.
But we don't always have the engine nearby.
That's right.
This one, in this case, we were getting kind of surrounded a little bit, and you know, we were holding in a structure.
Yeah.
But if you're, you know, a little deeper in the bush or something, mm-hmm. and maybe you're dismounted and you're, you know, now you don't really have a good reference point.
That's right.
So,
I think like for us in that environment, we had I mean, it wasn't casual, but like we knew the pilot. Mm. We had really good, you know, rapport with him, and we were able to make it work. Like, yeah. like you guys were chatting. It was like yeah. he knew what you wanted.
Yeah.
And that was working great. But I mean, that was just like you were just, you know, winging it.
yeah. Well, so. And it was interesting because I was always told, the, Helco, which is a command, they'll run the drops.
Yeah.
But in this case, our fire was so dynamic and big. Mm-hmm. Helco literally said, that helicopter's now tasked with helping you guys. Mm-hmm. We're going to go do some other stuff.
Yeah.
And then we just talked. So that, I think that communication level is important. Sure. And understanding, like, you know, are we going, like, if we don't know the pilot, are we going by the color of the helicopter? Are we going by their insignia on their tail?
Yeah.
Are we, and how do you call it? Like, north to us is east to them, you know, like, what are we basing it on?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it should be interesting. And having a helicopter flying around all day will be, that'll be entertaining.
Yeah.
be next level. Yeah. Next one we're going to talk about is, let's go back to the live fire for a minute. Let's talk about the natural gas. So Fortis is coming again. It's actually LNG. An LNG truck is coming down.
Yeah.
What have it? 50,000 liters of LNG? Is that right?
Yeah, it's huge.
It's like a semi truck full of LNG. And it's kind of they're going to basically run the LNG, show how LNG is super safe, which it is. Mm-hmm. They're going to have an actual fire. Mainly put out with extinguishers, from what I understand.
yeah. So it sounds like they want to have a hose line there for protection purposes in case things get away, which they say, like, that is so far out of reality that they will ever require that. But just as, like, a very, very far chance, they'll have a hose line there. Everything else is going to be done with extinguishers, which is a bit of a step away from the way that we've been doing the Fortis demos in years past. We've all been, you know, hose lines and fog and chasing, da 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 da. Where this year it's going to be a lot more precise attack, which is really, really cool. I'm excited to see what that looks like.
They did that one year, they did do a fire extinguisher with us specifically, remember?
In the vault.
Yeah. In the vault. Yeah.
So this is actually not a vault now, it's going to be basically a wall prop.
Oh, guys. So. Okay. no vault.
Yeah.
Nope.
Yep.
Two. No. Vault out. It's just.
Can't run both at the same time. He has to run one or the other. So we decided on the bulkhead.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Jokes. Yeah. So Fortis has been great. Sorry, I'm getting.
Yeah.
I think I drank too much coffee.
Fortis is a huge sponsor, like we mentioned before. Like, Fortis has always been super proactive with fire departments for fire training. And then having this venue is fantastic, and having it here is a massive part. So props to them.
Yeah, big props to Fortis. They've really come on board for us. So, like, they're not trying to sell their product. Like, there's no sales force here. This is they are literally coming just to help us train. Which is awesome.
Yeah. Got a kind of a unique one, which is the large animal rescue. So, in our area, we have a group called Alert, which I can't remember what that stands for. Ash can look it up. Essentially, what they are is like they're like first responders for animal care. So when we go to a fire or actually an MBI that we used at a few months ago, and there's animals involved, we just call them and for the MBI they were out like instantly.
It was fast.
Yeah,
like they're almost as fast as we were.
Yeah,
like
so they're based out of Penticton.
Yeah,
it's the Animal Lifeline Emergency Response Team, and they are a society. They basically run off of grant money and donations. They're based out of Penn. I think they have members scattered throughout the Okanagan. So that's how they get there quickly.
Yeah.
You know, the time that Scott was referencing, it was a dog.
Yeah.
Right? So not a large animal where this is going to be, you know, kind of looking at larger animal rescue. Like larger horses or any sort of livestock.
And if you don't have Alert in your area, it doesn't mean that you don't need to know this, because I think in pretty much every area there's going to be some sort of animal rescue organization usually. Or if not, then this is just good information to know. So what the idea they're going to have is a corral. They're going to make like a corral. Well, they're going to bring in the corral fencing. And they actually have a horse prop, from what I understand. And they're going to show how to, like, where to stand, how to slide it. because it is pretty dangerous. Like, getting in there, getting kicked, and
we've had an MVA actually south of town with a horse trailer, and the doors were all squished in, and we had to use the tools to extricate the horse.
Right,
and this is before they were around. Thankfully, we had some horse people there that knew how to do it safely. But it is definitely something that happens. And they'll deploy, they deploy all over the province as well for wildfires. And they'll go do a lot of livestock rescues and transport them to staging areas and other things.
Right. Todd, what do you got there? That we haven't touched on yet. There's a few more.
Sure. Let's go to RIT skills.
RIT skills.
Yeah. So one of our lieutenants is coming up to teach some RIT skills and do some RIT scenarios. I understand we're going to be using your RIT prop, your container.
Big container, yeah.
Yeah, so a whole variety of skills there. So he'll cover kind of the Cold Notes version of the basics as far as why RIT's important, you know, self-rescue, doing the proper mayday procedures and radio comms. And then the actual hands-on skills of self-rescue, two-person, three-person, et cetera, and then run everybody through a skill station and the actual props doing the rescue, which is key because you can get as crazy as you want or as minimalistic as you want with RIT. And having that C-CAN that you guys have with the way it's designed, I'm not going to give away any of the stuff in there. It's fantastic. It's very versatile.
Yeah, you can spend a day in there.
Yeah,
it's a 20-foot C-CAN.
In a 20-foot C-CAN.
Yeah, but we have abilities to move certain things, so you can basically keep going around in circles. Yeah. Yeah, and there's actually some openings on that C-CAN, and I think what we'll do is we'll add some props over there, like a chainsaw.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Perfect. I like that.
Yeah. So... yeah, that's going to be a great one, RIT skills. Next one, I'll be remiss if I don't mention this. Rob.
Yes.
This is Rob's baby. Fire challenge. We're not going to mention what the other name is because lawsuits and stuff. But fire challenge is basically the physical skills testing we would do on a either on a practice night or on a when you hire as applications. So it is a really good chance for people to test their skills against one another. There's going to be well over 300 firefighters there. We have age categories. I believe there's 8 different categories. There's captains, there's ages, there's genders, there's all these different ones. The prizes are going to be, I believe, snagger tools.
Modus has stepped
Shout
up.
Out to and, Modus.
Yeah, Modus is sponsored by Modus. Mm-hmm. So they're going to do some snagger tools with some possible laser engraving on it. So that's going to be pretty cool. Rob's going to be running his legs off because it's a cool thing about Rob. He will run with somebody will be running with every participant. Mm-hmm. And it's literally going to start at, 8:30 in the morning and run until probably 3:30 in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And he's just going to go. So it's really a lot of fun. Every year I say I'm going to do it, and I manage to avoid it somehow.
Yeah, day of is crazy.
Yeah. I'm always like, oh, yeah, I'll do it. And then we get busy, and I'm doing other things, and I'm like, nope. So.
And it's funny, like Rob's a really good instructor. Yeah. So even, our chief is like, hey, get Rob to do something else. So we mentioned it to Rob, and he was almost offended. He's like, no, this is what I do. He loves it. Like Scott says, it's his baby. He's really passionate about, course setup. And, he wants you to do well as well, right? I've seen people not, want you to fail, but they're like, oh, yeah, like, okay. I don't know. It's not a failure thing. Where Rob is, he's there. He's very, very encouraging. And he pushes you to,
definitely pushes you to succeed on them. Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. All right. Next one, Ash. Mm-hmm. What do you got?
Let's roll back over to vehicle fire.
Copy that.
Yeah. So we're gonna have a vehicle fire. We played around with a couple ideas of trying to get some gas props going and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. But with Ford is coming in with LNG, that posed a bit of a problem. So we swapped back over to actual live fire right on a vehicle.
Because nothing really, those gas props are great, but really
it doesn't simulate the real deal.
Solid, good vehicle fire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So big shout out to Oliver Wrecking and Salvage. Yeah. They have donated us a approximately 30 vehicles for the weekend.
We're not burning all 30.
We're not going to burn all 30. Yeah, like there's it's a big other donation. Uses, but it's a massive donation of vehicle props that we can burn, cut, squish, do whatever.
Yeah.
So we basically prepped all these vehicles, got them ready for burn. So all the fluids are out. It's as safe and environmentally friendly as they can be prior to lighting them on fire.
Yeah.
So yeah, just going through, the proper approach tech, making sure that you got your protection line, your attack line, working as a team.
Yeah.
So, pretty straightforward, but like it's a bread and butter attack.
Yeah.
That you can translate that over to dumpsters and things, right? Because it's basically the same skill set, vehicle fire and dumpsters.
You know, and I haven't talked to the instructors yet on the final, like after they're done the kind of initial attacks. But what we've now started doing, where we get the chop saw out or the grinder out and we take off the hood. Because inevitably, like, since we started doing that, it's like
so much faster.
It's so much better. Where whereas you're down, you're trying to fiddle with the latch and it's burned off, and then you're trying to do some weirdo like twisting the halogen into the wire, and you might get it, and then guys are banging on the hood and they do weird like
people overthink it.
Just take the chop saw
and off the hood.
We either cut like right across the hood, or
which I like the best.
Yeah. I like that, but I've been watching the guys do it lately, because a couple of the guys really like cutting the hinges.
Hinge side,
And I like cutting the hinges because because when they cut the hinges, then they spin it, and then no one walks in front of the possible bumper. The bumper's below, right?
Right.
It kind of protects them a little bit. Mm-hmm. I kind of like that, but I also like the other way. I like just a simple, right across the front of the hood and clear it. So, I'm going to talk to the instructors about that. That's something that we can add.
They
can
add multiple options, right?
Yeah. And add at the end, like when they're done.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's vehicle fire. So yeah, like you said, bread and butter fire. Mm-hmm. I was watching Todd. Stop the bleed.
Stop the bleed. Yeah. So, I'm going to be teaching a massive hemorrhage control. Stop the bleed version. So we're going to be talking about, why it's so important and, kind of what to look for. And then obviously all the fun stuff, the tourniquet applications, the wound packing and direct pressure, and then, just some, high fidelity sims with some skill sets and it's gonna be lots of blood and it's gonna be messy. It's gonna be a lot of fun.
And again, that's another one of those courses and skill sets that, people are like, why don't you, medical? Well, what happens on the fire ground?
Do you got blood in your body?
Yeah. So we all have the blood. So we want to keep it there. If it starts to escape for whatever reason, because we're not walking in a cloud, there's, broken vehicles, there's, structure collapse, there's many reasons in our field that is not us going to a patient. This could literally be us with us.
Yeah. And the big selling point with this as well is this crosses over to, everyday life, right? It doesn't have to be work-related or fire-related. And it can be something that we can present to them that they may not have thought of. And if they want to look into becoming instructors or bring it into their own community and their schools, it's huge. So we'll talk about those aspects of it as well.
Yeah.
It's changed the way that I go out in the backcountry, the way that I do anything, really.
Yeah.
Right? I don't just rely on Todd bringing his 45-pound jump kit with him.
Which you always forget at camp anyways.
Oh, yeah. I got my medical gear at the camp. I got a Band-Aid and an elastic band.
We'll make it work.
Okay, next up, let's talk about fire dynamics. So fire dynamics, we're actually building, which is actually, this is the only real big thing we're building, out of wood and a bunch of other items. It's, because we have a lot of other stuff already built. It's a water mapping prop. And the Justice Institute is actually one of its instructors coming down for this. And he's going to teach a water mapping fire dynamics course. So discussing, flow paths and thermal layers and all that sort of stuff, but also discussing different nozzle patterns, smooth bore versus combination nozzles, different pressures, and we're gonna build a water mapping room, which is basically just a square room. It's gonna kind of have a window and kind of plexi around the outside, so students and everyone can watch what the water is doing inside, what the flow is doing when it hits the ceiling. Which ones are the best, how much deluge you're getting from different patterns of water. And yeah, it should be interesting. And everybody's going to get a kind of a chance to run those nozzles and then to see see what's what. I always find those ones good because when you get fire, when you're doing live fire, it's fun. But you're also like, because it's fire, you're like, well, fire. And then there's smoke and you can't really see what's going on. So you can, it's working, but you don't really know why. So this is really showing you like the why. And in an environment where you don't need SCBA, where you can see everything, because if you know if our prop works out well, we haven't built it yet, we're building it. If it works out well, you should actually really be able to see all that.
If you got the guy on the nozzle, if you're watching,
yeah,
you can still visually see the effects of that hose tree.
Yeah, so it should be really cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Doug?
Bomb squad.
Bomb squad.
Yeah, RCMP. So, well, I guess for quite a few years now, they've been coming, doing that. So yeah, the RCMP bomb squad always comes and they're good supporters for it. And I remember the first year they were asking, oh, can we, you know, maybe we have this little plan and we're going to show us, talk about little things. And they saw the grand opening, things blowing up and fireballs. And that changed their mind that they actually wanted to blow some cool stuff up.
Yeah, because they thought a seminar, like just the name seminar. That's kind of one reason why we kind of... kind of getting
fired on
because seminar really denotes like it's going to be kind of stuffy and you know, a lot of classroom sessions and whereas we're not that.
Yeah, how many do we have on there?
Classroom sessions? None.
A zero.
Yeah. I'm in a classroom, but it's we'll explain filled that later. Yeah, filled with fire and blood. So, actually, sorry, but. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the bomb squad—they're going to do some interesting things. They usually merit their little robot and typically, they will blow something up. The one year they did, like, it's funny because, you know, in the movies, I'm like, oh. So I go to the guy who actually was, he actually grew up in our area. And now he's, I don't know if he's high up in the bomb squad, but anyways, he's on it. And I said, can you, like, he goes, what do you want me to do? I said, can you blow something up at lunch? He's like, what do you want me to blow up? I said, can you do, like, a car? He's like, no. Because if I blow up a car, it will kill everybody in the area. Because this isn't movies. I said, oh. So he goes, yeah, we need like a half a mile area zone around the area, and we only have like 200 feet. So what he ended up doing, he actually did I think it's called a disruptor charge, and it's the charge they use to deactivate like pipe bombs and stuff.
Right.
So, and it was like, I think it's like a thumb size bit of C4. Because I'm thinking, oh, like, can you get like a brick of C4? He's like, no.
So, crater the diamonds.
Yeah. He's like, so a thumb size piece of C4 in a bottle of water. Like, not a bottle of water, like a water thing. And basically, it's a water disruptor.
Right.
And when they blew that thing, rattled every window in the area, set off a bunch of car alarms.
Yeah.
Dogs were howling. People were running. It was like, it was crazy.
It was awesome. Yeah.
And it's just how loud it is. Like, you're not like, there's no big flames and stuff. It's like, yeah, that just dispels all the movie myths.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Bomb squad, they're going to be awesome, though.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Next up is, let's talk about AutoX. So we got the guys from Provincial Fire Safety. So the guys that teach us AutoX, they're out of Kamloops. We talked about them before. Mm-hmm. Great group of guys. They work on probably one of the more busier highways in BC.
Yeah, busy highway, heavy rescue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they work on the Trans-Canada. Mm-hmm. They work on the Coquihalla. They're kind of a hub. So Kamloops is kind of the hub for these kind of major intersections of these highways. Mm-hmm. So like I think we had said in a podcast previous, that show Highway Through Hell.
Yeah.
That's what it's based on.
That's
through there. Yeah.
So these guys, they don't go quite as deep into the highway as the Highway Through Hell guys do because they're tow truck drivers. Mm-hmm. But the AutoX guys, they deal with this stuff all the time. Yeah. They're really great instructors. They're not just book guys. They take experiences. Usually what they'll tell us something that they did wrong. And this is why we don't do it that way anymore. Yeah. So it'll be great. You know, it's only an hour sessions. These sessions are only an hour. So it'll be pretty down and dirty, but
you're
going to get a lot of information from them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And again, we have lots of cars to chop up. So probably one or at least one car session is going to get totally ripped apart. And
make it hurt. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ash, what do you got?
What do we got? What do we got left? Hazmat. So this is, again, another new session for us, which kind of came about in a weird way. So we were actually chatting with a podcast listener who came up with an idea that was going to be surrounding hazmat. And then it kind of seemed like they couldn't make their session work, just with the logistics of everything.
Yeah.
But as like we're bouncing ideas back and forth, we built this session. And the guy's like, oh, that sounds really cool. That's not my session, but that sounds really cool.
Yeah. So, and it's like roughly based on the hazmat sessions, yeah, courses we've taken.
Scenario. Yeah.
But, it, you know, it's going to be kind of that basic reading placards, reading the ERG, knowing what you can do, and then just some really quick scenarios on when the, you know, if there's a vehicle accident and you have to do a down and dirty rescue.
Yeah.
Pushing in fast under a hose stream if the chemical allows for that.
Yeah.
Push under a hose stream, rescue the patient, drag them out, quick decon, lots of water,
yeah,
and then decon yourself. Mm-hmm. So it'll be fairly simple, but it'll be a good reminder and a good refresher on a lot of this stuff. Yeah.
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 Mm-hmm. Let's talk about our VEIS, vent, enter, isolate, search.
Yeah, so Carrie. Again, yeah, so we have, that's an in-house instructor again. We've been big on VEIS. We kind of dumbing it down to VIS or VES.
Or I.
I. IS. It's the I search. So the only thing that is not implied is the isolate. Like, that is the one thing that you have to do.
You have to absolutely do that.
Yeah. So the iSurge is just that. I mean, it's a super cool room that we built out of a C-can. It's going to be injected with smoke. So we have a smoker, like a smoke machine, that we just purchased for, I think we're going to, you know, keep using it.
But if all else fails, we'll lose hay.
Yeah. Like, if it sucks. But all of the reviews, everything that we've done, you know, with research and such, this is an awesome machine.
Yeah.
We are going to demo it prior. If not, we go back to the old hay in a barrel. Okay. But it's your classic hose stream to the window, or hose to the window. If it's a ladder, you have two up on the ladder. One goes in. If it's entry level, one at the window with a thermal firefighter in. Beelines to the door, isolates the room, does a quick search. Mm-hmm. And then if there is a patient, get the patient out. If there's no patient, hop back out and move on to the next window.
Yeah. But, and, you know, it's still a... It still amazes me how it's kind of a new. It's like some people are still not doing it. Like they're just starting to do it. Even some of the major departments are just starting to touch on it now. We've done it live, like in a real fire situation, twice now. Two times in like actual structural fire, and then the second time was actually we EIS three different bedrooms.
Yeah.
Didn't find the patient. It turned out there was nobody inside, but we thought there was.
There was a report of somebody in.
Yeah, daytime call, vehicle in the driveway, person wasn't answering the phone. So all the kind of things, everything matched up. Mm-hmm. Turned out they were on a walk without their phone. Yeah. But those things matched up. I was actually the IC. So that's when I shifted the because it was originally just going to be a bread and butter, like, let's knock the fire down.
Yeah.
Then it turned into, okay, I want to hose cooling this while we do a VIS search.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the guys banged it off, and I think we searched three rooms in under, like, 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. So it was fast.
Well, that's the nice thing with it. Like, once you start drilling it and learning it, like, it can be done very effectively, very fast, as long as you have good, clear, effective communication. Mm-hmm. And that comes from that person in the window with the thermal, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Guiding them, talking to them constantly. And then you can just listen to their direction and rip through that room. Yeah. Awesome.
Next one is going to be, we affectionately call the burn pan. It's actually liquid fuel fires. So this is definitely going to be the one that's everybody gets drawn to because it's a massive amount of fire, a massive cloud of black smoke. We've picked up a fair amount of different fuel, the aviation fuel, things like that.
Yeah.
And essentially, we mix it with some water, floats on top. We light it up, and we used to call it the foam bit because that's really how we fight it, right? We fight it with foam. But it really draws the eyes and draws the ire of the town sometimes because it is a pretty black cloud of smoke.
Yeah.
it's all important work because it's that important training that we do.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, it's just basically we're putting foam on the fire and seeing how effective it is.
Yeah.
And it amazes because we hadn't trained it that much because we always did it at seminar and we kind of got the concept of it. But it amazes me when we actually did it like in our own department, how like once that foam starts moving across that
how liquid,
how effective
yeah.
it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's going to be another good one. Mm-hmm. I guess on the heels of that, as I said, it's quite a black cloud of smoke. We have the Ministry of Environment. so they're on site, actually, amazingly enough. And, you know, they get the fact that sometimes when we do training, it's not going to be as pretty as...
the most green.
Yeah, because the nature of the training we do. So, you know, it's... You know, they love coming to the seminar. One thing they teach is they teach how to deal with spills in waterways. And so they're going to be doing that. They're going to show some berming, getting into the water, dealing with things. So it sounds like – I remember when they first – they've been coming for about 5 years now, 5 or 6.
Yeah, about that.
It was going to be a classroom session. And I said, well, we can give you a creek. Oh, that's much better. So people, like, you know, you're like – Ministry of Environment. No, you actually get down the creek and teach them interesting skills, some different methods of berming and stopping those spills from getting into the water supply.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's definitely one of those sessions that, you know, you might not ever have them come out to your department. But these are like quick skills again that, you know, something that you might not be thinking of. But you can take those quick skills back and then build that into something that you can then teach back to your own firefighters as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's really what the seminar and Firepalooza is all about is these, this toolbox building.
Yeah.
You know, we're not giving you a certificate. You're getting just a whole lot of tools that you now take back in training or take back to your crew and just do some of them. Or maybe go, lad, I didn't really like that. Let's not do that. I didn't like BIS. I don't think it's something we should do. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
But now you've seen it. Now you've had it explained to you. You make a kind of educated.
Yeah, you can actually have a hands-on opinion.
Yeah.
Right.
And I guess that's going to lead into the next one. This is the one I'm actually teaching. It's kind of a contentious one. So I'm actually teaching active shooter. Now, active shooter, when I first mentioned it to some people, they roll their eyes. Like, oh, here we go. Like, what do we need to do that for? Well, unfortunately, the way we are in society right now, I was actually, you know, it's a pretty big American problem. But in Canada, we've had a fair number. But alone on this day, there's been 15 mass shootings in America. This year. So, and I always look at like, okay, so how many fires have, how many industrial fires has there been where people have died in that same amount of time? Probably not. Maybe one. But there hasn't been as many lives lost in that amount of time period. Yeah. And we really are, I think, behind the curve, especially for the fire service on active shooter. So we're going to talk about NFPA 3000. Which is a newer of the NFPA codes, and it specifically deals with what's known as an ASHER, an active shooter hostile environment response. So basically, any of the shootings, anything like stabbings, any of that sort of stuff, where there's a hostile intent, it wasn't an accidental shooting like at a hunting event or something.
Right.
So these hostile active shooter events, we're going to do it through the lens of law enforcement and then civilians, and then how those how fire specifically can fit in there, fire or EHS can fit in there through the rescue task force.
That's right.
Yeah. We're going to have armor, body armor on. We're going to be wearing, we're going to probably have some smoke machines going, some crazy screams happening. It's, you know, just going to, you know, up the level, a little bit of high fidelity sim.
Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. What have we got? Electrical safety, Fortis. Electrical safety. Again, Fortis, another wicked shout out to them. So yeah. Fortis goes all out for this. They'll bring in their trucks. They plunk a power pole right in the middle of the field, connect it. It's a live pole, live transformer.
I don't know if they're doing the live one this year.
No,
year? They were like, but they're definitely. It's like a massive prop.
They bring in a real pole. They half bury it, rest it up against a vehicle. Like it is a a wicked scenario.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's basically a giant teaching problem where mm-hmm. they can be like, yeah. and here is a car. And it, so it's, yeah, it's, it gets you thinking, gets you, and you know, rather than just seeing it on a PowerPoint, it gives you that visual of like how much distance there actually
shows
is.
Shows you those zones. Like hot saves.
Yeah, because they take a, you know, they spray paint, they talk about step potential.
Yeah.
It's a very educational, but not dry, not boring. And I think mm-hmm. they're going to bring their board out so that they will have some live electrical. They're going to bring their wiener roaster out and they're going to roast some wieners in it.
Yeah.
That's always an eye opener.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I know we've had that a few times. That's always an interesting one. Next one is going to be spinal management. So that's actually going to be taught by Coast Ropes. They have a couple interesting devices. So Coast Ropes is a company out of Lower Mainland.
Mm-hmm.
They deal with, obviously, a lot of ropes because it's their name, but they also deal with a lot of other patient management devices mm-hmm. and so they're going to talk about that. Spinal management.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, lots that will be focused around vehicle patient extrication. Mm-hmm. That's going to be one of their main points. But, again, new, kind of newish to us, newish to the seminar. We've got, I'll say, a special car prepared for them, mm-hmm. Specifically for this.
Yeah.
So this is what would happen once you've kind of done a roof removal on a vehicle, and now is the time to get the patient out.
Right. Todd, what do you got?
Let's get into electric vehicles.
Yeah, electric, mm-hmm. EV cars.
EV cars.
Or EV vehicles, I guess.
Mm-hmm. So Tesla?
So Kevin Patterson is out of Alberta, I believe. He runs a company called EVX, so electric vehicle extrication, I believe is what that term is. Mm-hmm. So he actually has a stripped down Tesla that has all as much of door panels removed, and you can actually see the internal workings of a Tesla. So he's going to go over it. They're not going to light it on fire because that'll be 5 hours later. We can put it out. And a lot of
30,000 gallons. Yeah.
So he's basically going to go over EV cars. It's big. It's a hot topic right now because there hasn't been a lot of vehicle fires, but when one happens, it makes the news and everyone like, oh my God, like we need 3,000 gallons of water, lots of water, lots of how are we going to put these things out? So he's going to go over that, talk about some safety, obviously some safety during extrication as well, not just fires.
Mm-hmm.
That should be an interesting. We have not seen that demo yet, but heard a lot about it. Yeah. What else we got left? Coming down to the end.
Yeah, we got an orientated search.
Orientated mm-hmm. search. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So an orientated search is essentially VIS backwards on the inside.
Yeah.
So, you're pushing down the hallway of a structure and, like a long hallway with bedrooms, maybe even a hotel, small apartment building.
Mm-hmm. Office building.
Yeah. You're coming down the hallway. The nozzle operator basically holds the line while they start doing searches inside. So, it is basically VIS inside.
Mm-hmm.
You call it an orientated search because you're always orientated back to that hose line, back to that center point in the hallway where they're holding the position. So that's going to be taught. We've developed another C-CAM that we can drop down, and we've made it in such a way that you can go around the hallway. It's a 20-foot C-CAM, probably turns into about a 50, 60-foot pull of a hose.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of movement. There's going to be some water flowing. So it's going to kind of go back to that wall-ceiling wall attack. Lots of water flowing, pushing down into to a bedroom, to a couple bedrooms, or a bedroom bathroom, I think.
Yeah.
Quick searches, and just how to get that search down fast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What do we got left? We got Force Entry.
Force Entry.
Yeah, Force Entry. That is an in-house instructor again. So we have our Force Entry door that we design, one of our members put together for us. We are duplicating that times two more.
We're going to have two doors.
Just again, going through how to force entry a door, kind of walking through all the steps. We have everything on our current door spray painted right on the door. Like if you're training this, like you want to be able to walk through the steps. So it's going to be everything, you know, leading up to the door, checking for heat, obviously the quick try before you pry, shock set, gap, go.
Yep.
So walking through that with the irons. Yeah, so again, we're gonna have a couple of props down there. We can keep running firefighters through that. Pretty self-explanatory, but a really awesome session.
Yeah, it's really just bread and butter. It's gonna be that kind of that residential structure.
Yeah,
The guys are gonna go too crazy into like, you know, it's got like 20 padlocks and it's got this on it, yeah, and then it's got a deadbolt and it's got a drop bar, and I got like, you know, you'll run into that. That's usually going to be a commercial building,
yeah,
for the most part. Mm. And I always find that commercial buildings is not the urgency of like life is not usually the problem. It's usually like we're trying to protect property. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's other things we can do. There's all these videos of like, oh, if you see this thing and that and this and on this door, this is how you can force entry. And they spend like, you know, they spend like 5-10 minutes trying to get in this door.
Yeah.
Whereas we could just take the chops on chop door. Yeah. Like some of the stuff, sometimes I'm like, that's a little ridiculous. Because
I get there are skills and like there may come a time, but yeah, if you're that involved in trying to force the door,
you're probably a truck company.
Yeah, for sure.
You're training all the time, right?
Yeah. So. Like that is your jam. Mm. Yeah. So yeah, for us, we'll probably grab a case on just make an entry. Yeah.
Well, and that's the fun thing. I mean, obviously in this session, they're not going to do all of it, but you know, force entry stuff, you can start with the basics, you can do the basics forever, and then you can get into, again, depending on the situation, is using the saws and doing other stuff, right?
Yeah.
But back to the, you know, we train all this stuff, and then, so, you know, the usual, like, the few times I've, you know, force entry a few times, but it's usually like, I come up, check the door, try before you pry, oh, it's open, damn it. You're kind of like, yeah, crap, it's open, okay? And then a couple times, it's, oh, it's locked, cool. So then I shock the door, which this basically means you kind of hit it like a battering ram a couple times to soften the lock, and the lock pops open. Yeah, so
it's a lot of the residentials they do.
Like, yeah. I just didn't get to use any of the stuff, any of the rest of the steps I want to do. So it's interesting. But.
Yeah.
And then last one. We have the last live fire, which is positive pressure attack and hydraulic ventilation. So, again, more C-cans. Everything we have for live fire is C-cans. One reason why we do that is we don't want to, like, we have a burn building, obviously, in our training facility, and we're going to have a bigger one soon. We could take people there and show them how awesome our burn building is.
Yeah.
And when we get the new one, it's going to be more awesome, like paving and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But I always find that's not the best for smaller departments. Mm-hmm. I like showing smaller departments what they can do on like a smaller department budget.
Yeah.
You know, what one C can actually do, like how much training you can get with just one 20-foot C can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and if you had a couple of C cans, you can put them together like Lego pieces and you can build your training on that. You don't have to have, you know, $100,000 facility.
Yeah.
Or have to go to $100,000 facility and pay, you know, $1,000 to pay for that. Those guys' facility.
Yeah.
You can make your own facilities that are safe, that are, and you can get a lot of training out of them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so the positive pressure attack, again, really simple, 2 C-can prop, you know, push in under the kind of the cover of a fan, push in, hit the fire, and then hydraulically vent the hot gases out the window. Mm-hmm. Really basic, but important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, again, that's like another one of those bread and butter attacks. Yeah. Like, if this is one of the only things that you train when it comes to live fire, if you can bang off that skill set, more often than not, you will have success.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And now, kind of in BC, we didn't mention like there's levels of service. So there's exterior only, interior, and full service. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of the volunteer departments are exterior firefighting only. Some of these skills are interior firefighting. Yeah. But again, back to the, well, you might as well train it because it could happen one day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were talking today, a lot of those rules they're not hard and fast.
It's how you interpret it.
Yeah. So training those skills is important. Mm-hmm. And just understanding those dynamics of how you can possibly search if you have to, like, as we always say, if you know, it sounds great to be an external firefighter only until there's someone inside of their house that you can save possibly. Mm-hmm. And there's things that you could do. And you know, maybe you can do a quick grab. Maybe, you know, maybe you can do a quick VIS of a room and grab them. Mm-hmm. So it's important to train these skills to see how they are. And even if you're not in an interior firefighter.
Yeah. Again, like the last time or the last thing that you want to do is be put in a position where you could potentially have a quick grab or a quick search. Mm. And then you're like, we haven't ever trained this. We've only trained exterior water out. But we're going in today.
Yeah.
So today's the day, right? Yeah. And you have zero background, zero skill set. So train for the what ifs, but operate like you always would. So even like these little 1 hour sessions aren't enough to say, oh, well, now I'm ready. No, but now you have an idea that you can take back and go and build that into some of your training regimen, right?
Yeah, because one thing I hate is always and never, like, even back to the active shooter, well, we're in a really small town. This will never happen. Well, mm-hmm. A lot of active shooters happen in a small town.
Mm, sure.
Because it's usually just people they know and things like that. So having that mentality is, I think, is one of the worst things to have in the fire service. It's never happened. Why don't we have to train that? Mm-hmm. There are certain things in your community that may never happen. You may not have a train track running through your community.
Derailment.
So a trainer derailment is probably never going to happen in your community. Mm-hmm. An airplane crash might,
sure,
because airplanes are flying around all the time. They might not have a landing strip, but an airplane could crash. Helicopter could go down, like we've had. We've had, you know. So we're not like doom and gloom, like, oh, this could happen, like Chicken Little, like, this thing's gonna land on your head. And like, no, it's just understanding that there is rhymes and reasons for these things.
Yeah,
that's what we're doing this training. Mm-hmm. Little sampler platter, I guess.
It's, yeah. Exactly.
It's a charcuterie.
Yeah. And the charcuterie of emergency skills. Guys, we banged off a lot of them.
I think that's it.
26 of them.
26 skills. Mm-hmm. So we are running low on space for the seminar, and they're running out of time for registration. But if you still haven't registered and you want to, check it out on the Oliver Fire Seminar page on Facebook.
Yep.
Or the Oliver Fire Rescue Society page.
Oliver Volunteer Fire Rescue Society.
Yeah. So you can check it out on there. And if you are coming, we just kind of gave you a quick overview of everything that's going to be there. That's pretty much it for the night.
That's perfect. So. That was an hour.
That was an hour?
Yeah.
Holy cow. That's exactly how long the sessions are going to be.
Yeah. You can, in this amount of time that you just heard us ramble, you will have gotten a skill set that you can take back.
Yeah. All right. Shout out.
Mm-hmm. Let's say 7 sessions to the weekend. Yeah.
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 So, Ash, Modus.
Yeah, Modus. They're going to be, like we've said all night, a big, big supporter of us at the seminar. They're going to be on site. Product demos, products for sale, and then giveaways. So watch for them there. All of the products, they're not going to bring their entire lineup, but they are going to bring a lot of their higher moving items. Their major claim to fame, obviously, is going to be their snagger tool. That's going to be the most dominant thing that's going to be out on display. If you are coming to the seminar, you will have the opportunity to put hands on. So that's really cool.
And to buy some.
Sorry?
And to buy some.
And then if you like what you see there, if yes, your hands can hold a hose, but if you realize how much easier it is with the snagger and you like that, hop on over to the Modus DTFF booth and you'll be able to purchase one right on site. So if you are buying off of the interwebs, you can use our discount code DTFF5, gets you 5% off. They will be running a seminar promo,
which is going to be substantially more than 5%.
Exactly. Yeah. So if you're thinking about buying one, but you will be attending seminar, purchase it there.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, Modus. Yep.
Manscaped.
Yeah, Manscaped. So, yeah.
They will not be at seminar.
They will not be at seminar. But
people's balls.
The byproduct of their product.
Absolutely. Oh, wow. Yeah, absolutely. Manscaped. So, of course, we talk about cleanliness and keeping things shaved and well-groomed. Mm-hmm. And that ties in with a lot of stuff we talked about with firefighter cancer prevention.
Yeah.
So in the nether regions there, you know, they've got the lawnmower 4.0, mm-hmm. the weed whacker now 2.0.
Yep.
And a whole variety of products, toners and creams and crop mops and
yep.
all that stuff. So it's fantastic product. We really like it. Really support them. And for that information, you can go to the Manscaped website and use our code DTFF20.
20.
We'll get you 20% off your order and free shipping.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
We already talked about them earlier, but Wolf Tree Coffee.
Yeah, Wolf Tree Coffee. Roasted and brewed in Oliver, BC. They are going to be on site at the seminar. They're going to be pouring our Wolf Tree DTFF blend.
Initial attack.
Which is the initial attack, medium dark roast. It is a combo of Peru and a Brazil blend of coffee. Amazing, amazing product. Yeah. So watch for that there. If you like what you see, you can hop on to info@wolftreecoffee.com. Give them a shout at 250-498-4074, or look them up on Facebook and Insta at Wolf Tree Coffee.
Tanner Olson.
Tanner Olson Band. Don't know where they're touring right now, but we know where they're going to be for a spring seminar. So, of course, for the Firepalooza event on day one there on Saturday. They're going to be the band for us.
Yeah.
It's going to be fantastic. It's an outdoor venue. When they came to the 100 year there, they're absolutely amazing. So I'm really, really looking forward to seeing them there again.
They played the, I was going to say the halftime show. There's no halftime in a hockey game.
No.
The, what, first period, second period, intermission? I don't know. One of the intermissions.
Yeah.
At the Canucks game. Did you see
that? No, I didn't.
Nice. Yes. Yeah, they played the,
yeah.
Yeah, they had, they, there's like a little, as in the,
Upper Concourse.
Roger Arena. Yeah, Upper Concourse. Yeah. They set up, they played to 18,000 people.
Awesome. And they,
yeah, I'll show you the video there.
Super,
it's
super
on Instagram. Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. It was a, what song was it? It was Canadian, was it Brian Adams song?
I don't know.
Anyways,
I don't
know. Doesn't matter. It's cool though.
Yeah,
yeah, so we're going to have some of those people at our crowd.
Yeah.
A little more intimate than 18,000.
Yeah.
That'd be cool if we had 18. That wouldn't be cool if we had
18. No, that'd be cool.
That'd be not be cool at all. Yeah, I don't think our liquor license would allow that. But check them out on Spotify and
all your listening platforms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you already said that, didn't you?
No.
Oh.
Perfect.
I'm missing anyone. I don't think so. Stop the Bleed.
Yeah, stopthebleed.org.ca. Of course, make your training fun in Master Hemorrhage Control, tourniquet application. Wound packing, track pressure.
Taught Siege in the course.
It's been a long night, lots of coffee. And yeah, the biggest thing with that is go online, see if you want to become an instructor. You can sign up and they give you all the content and platform to teach. But if you are going to be teaching it, make it fun. Make it as realistic as possible. Lots of blood. The more blood, the better for those training events and make it high fidelity.
Yeah. And lastly, there's us. So you can check us out on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok still? Yeah.
Yep.
TikTok, wherever you can find us, wherever you, all your social media, basically.
The YouTube.
YouTube, definitely check us out there. That's probably where you're watching us right now if you follow the QR code that we're going to post for this special episode. So, yeah, if you found us on that, you're going to be on YouTube watching us. Mm-hmm. That'd be weird. And what was that? Oh, we'll talk about that later. Mm-hmm. So check us out on those platforms. And spring seminar.
It's coming up fast.
Yeah. Super fast. Yeah.
All right. Any more from any more? You were?
No, sir.
Okay. Ash.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Todd.
Thank you. Good night.
Saluting someone.
The people watching.
The people.
Good night. Stay safe and stay DTFF.